glad to be here and able to do this. And this is the last day, and sure you guys have learned a lot of good and helpful tips to, you know, help improve and keep your life going and getting better, whatever it is that you're going to do. I picked this, I did this session because I wasn't able to find someone to do it. And, but it turns out that this is going to be a good session for me to do, a good timing. So what we're going to be talking about today is like public transportation, you know, including like subways, trains, buses, airplanes, paratransit. It's really cool that I'm talking about it because next Thursday I'm hopping on the plane to fly to Okinawa, Japan to see my granddaughter, my son and daughter-in-law, and I'll be there throughout February, and I'll be returning March 2nd. So I'm going to be gone for a full month. So in talking about transportation, here we have the paratransit, and they have the different names in the different cities that you're in. And here in Austin, some of our paratransits, we have vans. They have like little buses and they have different seating sizes. And some of the buses can take two wheelchairs and have at least 2, 4, 6, like 12 seats for people that are walking. And then, of course, the minivans that go around. So when you're getting onto the van, the metro van, the bus, basically that one has like 3 steps or 4 steps up onto the bus, and you just go back and find your seat. Usually once we sit down, we basically have the students in storing their cane, just basically put it beside them and or over their shoulder, just put the tip by their feet and have that cane handle in the body of the cane up against your shoulder. Because there's really no way that you can like lay it along the side of the wall. It's more cumbersome to try and do it like that in these particular vans. Minivans, again, what we do when you get into the minivans is if you're getting in the front seat, what we teach is you get in that van, you sit down first, check the seat, sit in the van, and then you're getting in on the passenger side of the front seat. You put your left foot in the van as you're sitting down. Typically what I'll have the students do is, particularly if it's a longer cane, you'll bring that cane handle over your left shoulder, kind of between you and the driver, but it's right over your shoulder. And you bring that tip into the van and you put it in right around where your right foot is going to go. And I always tell the students and emphasize to keep their foot outside the door, and basically, again, because if you're in a lift or a taxi or something like that, the drivers a lot of times are polite, so they want to hold the door and then maybe close the door for you. And if you put both feet in the vehicle before you got your cane stored the way you want it, sometimes they close the door, and then, of course, that's when your cane gets broken. So that's why we tell you to keep your foot outside the van. Then you bring once the tip is in, you bring the handle over your head onto your right shoulder, and then you can lay it just down beside you on the floor. Now, sometimes the way the seat belts are, they are, you can't get the cane to lay all the way down. So another way that we've learned they will store it is, you've gotten into the van, and someone was showing me the other day is like, you're going to put the handle of the cane like between where the hinge is. You don't actually, you just put it above that. So that you can slide the tip in under that seat belt where it meets the seat and slide the cane backwards. And then you can store the cane with the handle next to you on the floor. It's kind of a little bit complicated, but when you're in the back seat of the vehicle, you sit in the van of the vehicle. It's even when you're getting into a car and you sit in that back seat. And I have the students bring the handle outside the back of the car and then slide the tip in between the wall of the seat and the wall of the van. And then you can lay it down. If someone's getting in the front seat, you don't want to slide your cane all the way through until they've laid their cane down or they've closed the door, and then you can lay your cane down. We work with people that when you're going to go, you got like a 12 or 15 passenger van and you're going to go to that back seat. When you go into the van, you're going to go past that first seat by the door and you're going to just kind of drag your cane. Like if you're going to have it in your left hand, as you go into the van, you're going to go back to that back seat. Once you sit down and slide over, then you're just going to drag your cane in through with the tip on the ground and then maneuver it to where it's now over your left shoulder and the tip stored by your feet. And later on, when you have questions, I can try and make it more clear if it's not that clear. With the like riding on a subway, I've not experienced a whole lot of, well, not a whole lot of them. I've traveled them in Taiwan a couple of times and Washington, D.C. But basically, the seats that are facing forward, you just, again, store the cane over your shoulder. And the city buses, you have the seats that are facing forward, facing the middle of the aisle. So you walk on the bus and there's 3 or 4 seats on either side facing the middle of the bus. Again, you sit down and you just put the cane tip between your feet and then put it up against your shoulder. And on the city buses and the subways also, if it's just upright, it's people that are getting on the transportation, they'll see it. They'll start walking down the aisle, and if the bus or train starts moving, they naturally want to catch their balance. So they're going to reach out and grab your cane, and it could pull it out of your hand. They could put enough weight on it that it actually breaks the cane. So that's why you want to make sure to keep it up against your shoulder and the tip by your feet so that it's not in the aisle so someone can step and trip on it or, again, break it. The airport, the airports is always pretty interesting. When you go through the airport, like you have the one thing it's made like a door that you walk through. And then they have the roundy round thing. I don't know exactly what it's called, but, at one time when I'm going through that, the security, basically, there was once I did it. I gave them my cane and they were going to scan it, give it back to me, and then I could walk through the deal. They scanned it, but they didn't give it back to me. So then I had to rely on someone taking my hand and walking me through there. So I didn't like that. I don't like that. So after that, when I get to security, basically what I would do is I'd say, I'm going to go through this deal. If it's set very sensitive, my cane tip will set it off, but normally my tip won't set it off unless I hit the edges. So you walk through and I say, now you can scan the cane. And then if you want to do a scanned wand deal on me, that's fine. I don't really care. You can do that. But I can't go through those doors anymore because I've got 2 artificial hips. So now I just go through the roundy round thing. But I do the same thing when I walk in there. Again, they want my cane. I say, nope, I'm not going to give it to you. And then what I'll do is I walk in there and I do the little left turn, right turn. I lay the cane down on the floor, but I put my feet on it. I put my foot on it. Then this way they can't take it, which they've tried before. And then, of course, it scans you and whatever. And then you go out. And then sometimes they'll still do the wand thing. Now, the The thing that I did the first few times before I had the hip replacements, I would say, I'm going to go through, you can scan my cane after I go through. And then they would give me a little bit of grief. And just right away, I would say, okay, listen, let me just talk to your supervisor. And supervisor comes and I tell them, explain what's going to happen. And they say, okay, it's fine, because it should not set the alarm off. The cane tip is not that much metal. But then once you board the plane, you go through the airport and you can ask people where your gate is, or you can have a SkyCab or whatever it is walk you to your gate. Typically, you know, I'll go through and then I'll just find out from the security or whatever what direction I need to go to find my gate. And then I walk down the corridor, and as I'm going, I'll just ask people along the way where my gate is and things like that. Internationally, once you get in international space, security and all that kind of it's quite different. So it's not quite the same. I can't be quite as assertive there as I am here. But typically, I don't have any trouble because they know that I need the cane to get from point A to point B. And typically, I'll just walk with somebody. You know, I can either take a guide, or I can just walk along with them while they're talking to me to get to the gate that I need to go to. There's times when I get on the plane, I will by my seat area, and hopefully there's no one by the window seat, but usually if they are, I'll ask them, you know, if I can leave my cane next to the window seat. And, you know, I've not had anybody tell me no yet. So then that way I know where my cane is stored by the wall. And before they're on the big planes, there's like a seat of three on either side. And then down the middle, there's like five to seven seats or something like that. And those, basically what I've done is I've actually just laid my cane along the front of the chairs, like, well, right where my heels are by the seat of the chair. And that way, and it usually does not stick out all the way to the other end of the seats. So if I'm in those aisle seats, like the middle seats like that, that's kind of how I would store my cane. Let's see. Can't think of any of, well, let's see. I have one of my friends, she rides a motorcycle. And so I like to go riding with her. And so when I get on the back of her motorcycle, what I do is as I wrap my arms around her, I flip my cane upside down. So the handle is in my right hand, but it's not rested over my shoulder like the military guys when they're carrying their guns, but it rests in the crook of my elbow. So it's sticking out behind me, but kind of at an angle. And then sometimes I can maneuver my hand to where it's sticking more straight behind me. So it pretty much looks like an antenna. So that's kind of the way I do the story of my cane if I'm riding on the back of a motorcycle. I can't think of any other.
Winfred, this is Judy.
Uh-huh.
One thing we might want to talk about is if, as you learn more about using your cane, and some of you have been doing it a long time, if you're going to go out to catch a bus and you are at a bus stop and you know there is more than one route coming to that bus stop, then this is where having your cane should be of great advantage to you. Because number one, what should happen, but it will not always happen, is because the bus driver sees you with your cane, that person will tell you, or should tell you, the bus number. This is an 18G. If he doesn't, start going toward the bus, maybe even put one foot inside the bus and say, excuse me, what bus number is this? Now, if you don't have a cane with you, don't be surprised if they don't tell you, because they won't know that you don't know.
Correct.
So there you go.
We have a raised hand. Shelley has her hand raised.
Okay.
Hi, Winfried. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Travel internationally, and I don't know. That sounds like a different story altogether. I didn't know either. If you're going to, have you ever ridden on the light rail system like that would be in Denver, where you've got the train above ground and it's kind of zooming along and stops at different streets and stuff downtown? Have you ever ridden on a light rail?
No, more just like the subway.
Subway.
Yes. The subway. And what we did is like right a lot of the subways right next to the track. There's like a little sort of like the truncated domes things.
Yeah.
Okay. But then also when it stops, you can hear the door hiss open. So you have an idea where that door is. And when my son and I went to Taiwan, their system is set up. I mean, when the doors, these guys are like very precise drivers because between where the doors are between each car, there's actually a wall, a small wall there all the way. So from one door to the other, so the only way you would theoretically step onto the track is if you go in the opening when there's not a train there. So
I like that system, and it wasn't learning from other blind people. That's what I did in Denver, was just awesome because there's a lot of cues to figure out when to get on, when to get off. Which side of the train you need to be on, which side of the track you need to be on. One thing I was going to mention, getting on a bus or the light rail to find a seat, is that you can take your cane and just kind of gently sweep it in the seat that you're walking up to, like in front of you, and check if there's a space there, if there's no legs or whatever. Right. You don't want to really be whacking around, but if you just do it gently, you can a lot of times find a seat there, or just verbally ask, is there a seat available or something? And people are usually really helpful too. But I really love the light rail, man. That's the way to go if you have the option.
Yeah. And one of the things that when I'm working with the students is when they get on the bus, and it's that left right thing, and they'll say, "Can you tell me, driver, are there any seats available?" "Yes, there's one on your left," or "No, yes, there's a couple of them on your right," and that's helpful. But I tell them, if you really want to make it easier for yourself, you ask the driver, "Are there any seats available on the driver's side or the passenger side?" And then that way, if they say driver's side, then you know once you start going back there, it's on your right. If it's the passenger, it's on your left. Mm-hmm. Now coming up in Tokyo, it's going to be the opposite. Driver's side is going to be on your left and passenger side is going to be on your right. Yeah. Because they drive on the wrong side of the street.
Wrong side of the street. Oh, that's too funny. Well, that's neat. Yeah. Do you see a lot of blind people in Japan traveling around? I mean, is that a common kind of thing? Is there good training there to where you see people out and about some of the places?
My son's lived there in Okinawa for a long time. He's only seen maybe three or four blind people.
Okay.
I went to the school for the blind to check it out, to do a presentation at the school when I went in 2018. Mm-hmm. And basically they're still pretty much using sternum high canes or just below the chin. Mm-hmm. When we were walking through the school from one class to the other, first we had to, which is it's cool. Traditionally, you have to take off your shoes and you got to wear the slippers that they give you. That deal, my son and I both were like, the slippers only came to about mid heel, so the back of the heel of the slippers was in the middle of our arch. On the floors in the school, if you guys can imagine bump dots that are half inch by half inch square, I guess. And there's like three tracks of bump dots that run right down the middle of the hallways. And so they use their canes to follow those tracks. And then when it gets to an intersection to go left or right, then there's just like a big square. Well, they're just like more bump dots in a pattern. And then so then you can determine whether you're going to go left or right. So that's how they travel there.
Well, I don't want to keep taking up a bunch of your time. If other people have questions, I'm not trying to do that. It's interesting to me. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hey, Winfred, this is Michael. I have a question, if you haven't covered this already, to talk about kind of how to use your cane if you're walking sighted guide, maybe you're getting assistance somewhere, or especially through a restaurant with crowded tables, or even out on the street, how you can use it to protect yourself, because maybe they're looking straight ahead, not thinking about your clearance. So use that so you don't hit a sign or hit your leg, ankle on something. So talk about that a minute.
Okay, good. Yeah. So that's one thing that what I do when I'm working with my students and I have them and I explain to them about going guide is the guide is there to guide you. Now, and I tell them, you don't want to be like a passenger just sitting there, like you sit in the car and you're just there and you're oblivious to what's going on. But you want to be an active being, you want to be active as you're being guided. So you're going to have your cane in the pencil grip and you're going to be gently scanning the cane between left and right, just like you want to keep that arc going left and right. You're going to arc it if you're depending on what side you're on. If you're a lefty and you're on their right, on their left side, you want to arc your cane in towards them just about in line with your right shoulder, and then arc it back outside of your body, just past your elbow. So the question the other day was, what's the widest part of the body? Shoulders, hips, and some say hips, some say shoulders, and actually it's your elbows. Your elbows are probably the widest part of your body. So if you ever look, you know, when your arms are up, the elbows are outside of both your hips and shoulders. So you want to arc that cane outside your elbows. So again, that if there's something there, you can catch it. You still want it lightly kind of on the ground so that if there's a, because they should pause before they step down, pause before they step up. And a lot of times they will tell you, up, we're going down some steps, or we're going up some steps. Sometimes they forget. And the other thing that the reason why you want to make sure you're crossing your body with that arc is again, they're guiding you, but at the same time, sometimes they're being distracted by just things around them. And there's times when you come to these steps and they've got that rail right in the middle and you really don't want to hit that. It's not going to be very comfortable. So you want to be arcing your cane like that. That again, and then you're going to have the tip, not quite a 45, but you know, you got to have it angled out away from you. So in theory, if you did arc it all the way across in front of them, it wouldn't hit their toes. But you want to still keep it kind of fairly close to your body. Yeah. And same thing with in the restaurant. That way, it'll hit the back of a chair or the leg of the chair. So that way, you know that you just have to just move a little bit to your left or your right. And also, the guide may be giving you a signal by putting their arm behind their back or to their side, to let you know that you need to go behind them. Now, sometimes you might take a guide from someone that's not familiar with guiding you. And so you're going to need to maybe give them a little bit of instruction. Like, I'll take your elbow. And then you might say to them, and when you go through a narrow place, if you would bring your arm behind your back. Okay. Cause I've had people guide me before. And as we start to go through a doorway, so I'm on their right arm. And as I'm going through the doorway, what they will do sometimes is they will turn their left shoulder back and start to bring you through leading with their right shoulder. So your right shoulder, your left shoulder, their right shoulder, they are leading through the door, which is not real a proficient way of going through the doorway. So then that would be a time when you say, okay, hold on, let's have you take your left shoulder through the doorway first. Okay, is that makes sense? It also makes it kind of awkward as you're trying to go through there. Sometimes if you're, like, for example, Jane Lansaw, if she wants to do guys, she's like 4'7", 4'8", maybe. So sometimes rather than her reaching up and grabbing some 6'8" guy's elbow, then she would just reach out and get the wrist, and sometimes if a big guy, same thing, but the person being shorter is going to be guided, then the guy could either put their hand on their shoulder or on their neck. I usually will use the shoulder if they're really short. That's kind of like, yeah. This is kind of interesting. Go ahead.
This is Judy. I want to compliment you for referring to guides. For years, I always heard people talk about a sighted guide. And it came to me that I've walked with blind people before, and I'm totally blind, and I'm the one doing the guiding.
Exactly.
And so it is, I like it when people say just guide. If someone needs an adjective to put before it, you could say human.
Right.
Guide. Yeah. But we don't have to acknowledge whether the guide is blind or sighted, because it really doesn't matter. It's the one in front who's supposed to know what they're doing.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. So, and that's the way I think of it, is just, there's just a guide. It's funny. After I gave the example, I just thought about it. There's a place here in Austin, Specs, that I will go to sometimes to buy cigars. One of the guys that works there is, don't know the correct term, but a little person. And on the other hand, then there's a guy there that literally is 6'8". And I've been guided by both of them. So I've had to use both techniques, although I got his elbow because I'm like a 6'8" guy. I've taken his elbow because I'm like 5'9". But those are examples of how you can, you know, take a guide.
This is Shelley. Never underestimate the size of a short person. I'm only 4'10", and I do a lot of guiding. I've been on the guiding end of things as well, and it is kind of funny. And I always comment when I take somebody's elbow, if they're real tall and I'm reaching up to get their elbow, I'm always going, wow. I look up at them, I go, wow, you're really tall. You know, it's like, you know, well, that's kind of a no-brainer, you know.
Yes.
I know Jane pretty well, and yeah, we're both cohorts in crime when it comes to height. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so let's see. Trying to think.
Woo-hoo! It's check time! Woo-hoo!
All right!
It's check time!
Okay, I am unmuted now. And let's acknowledge our four winners. We have, hang on, I'm going to read them because, you know, if I get somebody mixed up, then you might think you're not eligible to win. These four people have already won their prize, so they don't get to be in the drawing today. We have Carolyn Peters. We have Judith Ray, we have Gloria Conway, and we have Linda DeBardinis. So the four of you got to be excited earlier this week. Now we're going to do one more drawing and thank you to the NFB of New Jersey for your generosity. Our four winners, soon to be five, appreciate it. All right, Alexa, volume 8. Alexa, I was hearing someone else's. It's going to be the Alexa on my phone. Alexa, give us a number between 1 and 27.
Here's a number between 1 and 27. It's 24.
24, they say. And I have 24 as Pat Harlan. Pat, are you on the phone now?
Amy's here. Let's see. If you unmute, don't forget you have to say woohoo. Let's hear it.
Can someone unmute her?
We cannot force her, but
Pat is here. And Pat, I sent a request to unmute.
But she
should
did
be able to hit OK.
Star 6 is how you do it.
Mm-hmm. But Pat is here.
Well, we know her phone is here. Do we know that she didn't put it down? And it'd be good if you spoke to us, Pat.
Well, she did express some challenges due to arthritis with muting and unmuting.
Right.
So.
Right.
She has been here faithful all week. She has been here.
I mean, I know she had some difficulties doing that. Is that okay with everybody?
Sure. You rule.
Woohoo! That's worth it.
Congratulations, Pat.
Yeah, I agree. Give it to her.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Winfred.
Yeah.
Back to you, Winfred.
Okay. Let's see. Before I get off here, for sure, I think his name is Bernie, is still in the Zoom today. Do you guys see him? I can't get my speech to come back on. So, but he asked a question the other day, and I just wanted to let him know that I got an answer for him about swimming. So he wanted to know.
My suggestion is that you just give us the whole answer and he's supposed to be listening, so go for it.
Okay. So the answer that he asked about staying in his lane is, my friend said, first, when you get into the gym, to the pool area, let the lifeguard know that you're going to be whatever lane you're in. He said what he does is he lays his cane on the lane line that he's on. So he's got the cane between, on the line. And he said when you're swimming, if you know that there's going to be someone else in the lane, that you talk to them and make a understanding that you're going to be on the right side or whichever way you're going to go. But he said then as you're swimming, every time you reach in your swim stroke to touch the side of the lane line. And he said then once you get to the end and you make your turn around, he said move to the middle of the lane a little bit before you take off going again so that you don't inadvertently go under the rope, under the lane lines to the other lane and then get back on the side that you're on and follow the lane line like that. That was the suggestion. So there you go. Let's see. Any other questions about like transportation? I'm trying to think of anything else I can think of that might be helpful.
Yeah, we're down to 20 minutes. So if anyone has any questions, something that you didn't feel was covered all week or you want some further explanation, it's a great time to raise your hand and ask.
Yep, anything.
Well, this is Shelley, and I'm just going to comment that I think we're always in a mode of education. So whenever we're out about in the public, you've mentioned this before, we always are wanting to educate people what we're up to and how to go about things to make it smoother.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. And you've got to, the people that, for example, probably like 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, we've been doing these immersion things where we have a lot of the managers and field teachers and counselors and all from all over the state of Texas coming in. They've been hired in the last 3 or 4 years, but because of pandemic, they couldn't come down to do their 2 week or 1 week or 6 week immersion thing. So we're starting to get them in now. But there was a group here that was here for like 1 week. And we were getting ready to go outside on one of the lessons. And that this was going to be like on a Thursday. We're getting ready to go outside. And as she was walking, she says, Winfred, I saw you going yesterday at lunchtime. I saw you walking and you were going to lunch. And I said, okay, yeah. She said, yeah. And she says, and you were doing so well. And I'm like, okay, all righty then. It's like, so I've been walking around blind forever. And just seeing me walk around as on a sidewalk, you know, it's like an incredible thing for people. So those are times when we, you know, have to take that moment to educate them and say, well, you know, whatever it is. Well, yeah, you know, I have been doing this a long time. I've been working here for a long time. You know, I learned how to travel when I was in my early 20s and all that kind of stuff. So like people will say, well, do you know where we're in the building? Or do you know where you are in this? Do you know where you are? I'm like one of the immersion. Actually I do. I mean, I've actually worked here for 21 years. So, if I don't know where I am, I'm in pretty bad shape. But yes, I know where I am. And don't worry, I'm going to help you get oriented and everything. So we've always got to educate. The other thing that I also would tell my students, too, is that you always want to put your best foot forward, do the best you can at being polite and all that. I said, but you're human. And there's going to be a day, no matter how polite you are, that you're not, it's just not going to happen. And that's going to be a day you're just going to come back at them. And it's not going to be very nice, but you want to, if you want to snap at them, basically, you want to try and do it in a very nice way, but stern, so that they get the point that, you know, they don't need to belittle you or think less of you or anything like that. But sometimes you just gotta, and sometimes they're being over helpful and you just gotta say, look, I got this, just back off, you know, and it's not a bad thing. It's because sighted people do it all the time. So everybody does it. So, but yeah, any questions? You guys are all so quiet. What is the deal?
Ada Wilson's hand is raised. Ada?
Hello. Hi, Ada.
Okay, something that I've learned how to do, because I live in the city, and most of the time I take the same buses to the same places. And most of the time the drivers are very, very helpful, and they'll ask me where I'm going. And they always remember, and they'll let me know ahead of time. But sometimes if they don't, I ask them to let me know the step. This works for the regional rail also. The stop before the one I have to get off at, so that I can prepare myself to get ready to get off at the next stop, and that way I never miss my stop.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about that, we have here now in Austin, the buses have the annunciator thing on there, and they're not always working, but
exactly. Exactly.
But they'll give you some warning, and when it announces now approaching 45th at Guadalupe, that's when you push the button or pull the cord.
Yeah.
Now, like one of the buses, there's a seat right next to the wheel well. But the button that you need to push is by the third seat, so there's no way to reach it. And when they lift the seats for the wheelchairs, they have those little push pads where the wheelchair guys can push them to request the lift and the stop. So you typically got to either get someone next to you, say, hey, can you push that button for me? Or you can just nudge the person and say, excuse me, you got to reach under that second seat and push that button. So they will announce sometimes where they are now. And also we were talking earlier where when you go to some of these stops have like multiple bus stops on this one block. So when you get off your bus or you're looking for a particular bus, again, walk up to when it stops and it may announce it or not. You walk up to Judy said, put your foot on that bus and say, can you tell me where I can catch the number 30, and then they're going to say, well, it's in front of my bus at the next bus stop. And so then you make your way down to that next bus stop. So those are some things that you can do. And there's a couple of our bus stops they're called rapid bus stops, and they have a button that you can push, and it will tell you when those buses are going to be coming and taking off. So it's like the number 803 will be arriving in 11 minutes. And then it'll tell the second one, and the 803 will be arriving in 22 minutes. And then it repeats it in Spanish. Yeah.
June had her hand raised and then lowered it. So June, I'm not sure if you still had a question or if maybe it got answered for you.
But you can still ask it.
Well, she since muted herself, so maybe not.
Okay. One thing I want to tell you guys again that I really love teaching. I tell my friends and my coworkers all the time, literally, if I could teach O&M like 24 hours a day, I would be teaching O&M 24 hours a day. And so having the opportunity to do this for you guys and with you guys is always really, really fun. And I really do appreciate you guys, inviting me to come back. And so I just want all you guys to know that. And for you seniors that are in here, I'm also a senior. I want you guys to, just keep on doing what you do and living your lives and, have a good time.
Jean?
Does someone have a question?
Yeah, Jean, you just need to unmute. Jean Park has a question.
I sent you a request to unmute. Now put your hand down, but you can still ask your question.
You there, Jean?
The internet got her.
Oh, internet monster.
Well, Jean, if you can unmute yourself, I'm going to add one thought for everybody, but please feel free to interrupt me, Jean, if you can get through. I want to challenge everybody. We've learned a lot about cane travel this week, and for some of you, you've been doing it. Maybe we gave you some hints that would be helpful. I hope so, and I hope you will use them. For others of you, it's a brand new experience. I know one of you, for the first time this week, ordered your free white cane, and I hope everybody will do that. And then I hope you'll challenge yourself to start simple, if you've never done this before, and start walking around your house. It isn't because you have to do it, but you'll practice using your cane, seeing if you find the chairs or the tables with your cane and not with you. And then when you feel a little bit better about it, particularly if you live in an apartment building, go out in the hall and walk up and down the halls using your cane from side to side, because particularly if there are other seniors who have wheelchairs or walkers, you want to have your cane out in front of you to make sure that you are not in their way. And then if you get really brave, or you live in a house, you don't live in an apartment, try, if you live in an appropriate place, walk around the block. Don't cross anything yet. Just try walking around the block and see how you feel. And in addition, if you have blind friends and you want some lessons and you know they're good at what they do, see if they'll help you. Mm-hmm. So having said all that, Winfred, I don't know if you have any last thoughts.
Yes, I do. And in saying that, that's a really good suggestion. And this is the thing for you guys to also think about. When you started out in your career working, and whatever the career was, and it's the first time you started doing it, you had to learn how to do it. You had to keep working at it to get better and better and better at doing that job. This is the same thing. You're learning how to do it. You got to do your job to get better at your job. You got to do the cane travel to get better at the cane travel.
This is Jean, and I did finally, my mute button was in a different place. So am I being heard?
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, hallelujah. Huh? you kind of answered some of the things that I've been concerned about in the last, both the last two. And I would call it, I am a learning cane traveler, and I've been learning since I was first trained in 20 years ago, because my eyesight has diminished from that point to now. I basically have no usable vision. And I'm the only white cane in my senior community of 250 people or thereabouts, but we have at least 10% of our community has vision issues. And many of them have been describing how they've fallen and how they've done this or that. And I know how few trainers there are in, and we're in the Phoenix metro area, but there are very few certified trainers here. What is, and it's not like I feel like I am the know-it-all, but I can at least show somebody how to use inside the building, like you were suggesting, the apartment building. I don't think I'd ever dare take anybody outside and be responsible. But inside, I might be able to. What's the biggest negatives about someone who's marginal themselves at least helping somebody else realize there is a better way of doing this than tripping over the name your item? Now I'll try and unmute again.
The negative, I'm not sure, but the thing of it is that if you're showing them even how to just hold that cane in a pencil grip, you know, with it like your hand near the handle, so give them a little space between whatever they're hitting and their body. The biggest thing is to think about is helping them get in and around that complex inside. If it is a negative, and you've already touched on it, that you would not want to take them outside. That if you feel uncomfortable with doing that and then did it, you know, that would possibly be a negative. However, if there are fairly good sidewalks in there where you can walk like out of the complex towards the street or towards the driveway, you know, you could say, guide them as you guys are both using your cane. And they can use, if they're right-handed, you're right-handed, they can put their left hand on your shoulder, and they can also still do pencil grip and arc it left and right if you consider doing it outside. But inside, I'm not going to say that there's any negatives. Again, make sure they keep the tip low to the ground, so that way, particularly if there's downstairs, steps down to keep their cane moving so that they don't go down the stairs. And or you can go stand where the stairs are and help, and just as you're there, wait till them approach the stairs so they can then see how that cane finds those stairs going down. Does that help?
Yeah. Well, thank you. I guess it's still, I'm the one that's going to have to get up the nerve to decide that I probably know enough to. I'm an experienced teacher, and I always feel like I, you know, in my past life, I'm not an experienced cane teacher. So I think, cool. But I'm beginning to think some of them just need to realize it's not end all when you come out of the closet showing you are blind and you're carrying a white cane, you know, and that's the part I think that is important to emphasize, is it's a helpful tool. It's not woe is me tool.
Right.
So that's where you're going to be the ambassador to let them know that it's not the end of everything, and that you know we can do this, and so now you will give them encouragement when you do this.
And especially since I'd kind of forgotten about the free white cane. I mean, I have mine, and then I have about four others that I've gotten at different trainers use different ones. And I've had three different trainers in my life. So they each gave me a different cane, and that's been kind of helpful as far as understanding. But I thought, well, if they can get something free, maybe I can encourage that. So thank you very much. I appreciate all you've said this week.
Yeah. Good.
Jean, this is Liz. If I could add just something, you know, you might consider reaching out to your local National Federation of the Blind chapter and see if they might want to come do a presentation at your center. I know we do that all the time, and share, you know, resources about cane travel and other things. But there's also the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program that it's run in every state. They might be able to come to see if folks would qualify for services and get more training. And then, of course, just helping people sign up for a free white cane. Some cane is better than no cane. So
that's for sure.
Well, this is, and this I appreciate everything you've said. And in fact, I've tried all those, and the NFB chapter has definitely volunteered to come and help. And so that's the helpful part. The part that's the scariest is if you sign up to be evaluated to get on the state senior independent living program, the wait time is 6 to 12 months. And so people just, you know, when you're 82 years old, as we all know, you can't imagine that far. I've got to get from here to there. Wait.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, we are
Judy, this is Shelley. I just might want to offer one thing. I've been in contact this week in preparation for this training. Connie LeBlond out of the, I think she's out of the Tucson, but she works with Savvy Services for the Blind. And I could get contact information, Jean, to you about her. And maybe there's a way that there is somebody in the state of Arizona that could help you with some potential training.